Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the worlds of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
So Tim totally bummed me out by talking about the latest variant. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Brush up on your Greek alphabet so we can, you know, start practicing.
Funny, not funny.
Whatever the next letter is.
Lots going on. So let's get to it. And just for those of you keeping track, as we are always at Bloomberg, global cases when it comes to COVID top 366.9 million, deaths past 5.6 million, and the vaccine more than 10 billion shots administered, Tim, around the world.
Well, let's go to Dr. Ian Lustbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone Medical Center. He joins us on the phone from New York City, as he does on most Fridays. Dr. Lustbader, I want to start with what Carol and I were talking about just a couple of minutes ago, this Omicron subvariant, BA.2, appearing to be even more contagious than the original fast-spreading strain. That's according to UK health authorities. We do know, though, that vaccine booster shots remain an effective shield. How are you reading into this?
Well, we talked about the possibility of more mutations, and this Omicron variant definitely... Happy Friday, by the way, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yay, we got here.
We got here. We made it. Is definitely a split off of the original Omicron, or maybe sort of co-evolved with it. The genetics are slightly different than some of the other mutations that we've seen. The good news is it appears that people who've had Omicron will be resistant to the BA2 variant. So that's good news. It does seem to be maybe slightly more contagious, and we can talk about what that means, but certainly not more lethal. So overall, this does appear, as viruses overall tend to mutate, tend to be a little more infectious, tend to be a little less lethal, because viruses are more successful if they don't kill their host. So I don't think this is a meaningfully worrisome development, in a way not completely surprising. We're seeing some indications in California, Texas, Washington of the BA2 strain, more common in Europe, in Denmark, and certainly in the United Kingdom. And it may replace, just as Omicron replaced Delta, the BA2 strain may replace Omicron. But at this point, it is not killing more people. And basically the same approach that we're using, whether it's vaccines, you know, masks are very reasonable. We have a medication, Evusheld, for immunocompromised patients, which is becoming somewhat more available. It's two shots. They're monoclonal antibodies. So for people who are really at risk, they should talk their to their doctor about this, because mm-hmm. that is available for prevention, not just treatment.
How are you doing? You still sound, you're still just a cold, or?
I'd say I'm 99% better. Yeah, voice still not 100%.
Okay.
It's interesting. We're not really seeing sort of long COVID symptoms from Omicron, but who knows? You know, we'll have to track these things further out. I'm feeling fine. What about you? How are you doing?
I'm fine. I never had any symptoms. I had a million negative tests, including my PCR test, which I took on the same day that I took a rapid. That rapid came back positive.
Maybe you had it. Who knows?
Tim and I.
Dr. Like, Lusbader thinks you had it. But.
I know. I don't think I had it, but I don't know. And I'm continuing to get tests, and you know, and I'd just be careful. So,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah, I wouldn't worry at this point.
I'm not, right? I got to just live life. We all do, but just carefully. Yeah. Hey, do you think it's a given, Ian, that we're going to get a fourth vaccine dose booster at some point?
They're offering it in Israel, and certainly for people who are at risk, elderly, having significant problems, immunocompromised, it probably is not going to be harmful. It's very unclear. Four doses of alpha for really Omicron or BA2, very unclear how protective it'll be and how long that protection will last. So if you're at risk for 90 days, think about things like Evusheld, which is AstraZeneca. Think about early Paxlovid. We do have that available for people who are at risk, who test positive and have mild to moderate symptoms. So there are various options available. The fourth vaccine, I think, is less well proven, certainly, than Paxlovid, which lowers hospitalization and severe illness, you know, 80-90%. So that is certainly very reassuring.
Hey, I'm wondering, Dr. Lusbader, about masks, because we did learn that in San Francisco, they have removed an indoor mask mandate for offices and gyms, that still people have to prove that they're up to date on vaccinations and boosters. That starts February 1st. What do you think that's going to dispel for New York City, New York State, and other areas of the country?
So, again, depending on the kind of mask, how you wear it, there are so many variables that it's very hard to really get hard data, you know, on this. I think certainly for kids in school, we do think maybe that's had a negative impact and on socialization and other areas. I think if you're overall healthy and there's no mask mandate, if you're insecure, certainly wear it. If you're someone at risk, if you're immunocompromised, if you're elderly, I would take every measure possible to reduce risk, which would include wearing a mask,
right,
even though we know they're not 100%.
All right. Well, take care. Always nice to check in with you and stay well. Dr. Ian Lusbader, clinical professor of medicine at NYU Langone Medical Center.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So among the most read on the Bloomberg today, it is a Bloomberg exclusive. It's about how Wall Street got a briefing from the Biden administration on possible sanctions against Russia, Tim.
Yeah, the story written by Jenny Serene, Catherine Doherty, and Hannah Levitt. Hannah joins us now. She's finance reporter at Bloomberg News. She's on the phone from New York City. Hannah, you and our colleagues write that Citi, Bank of America, JP Morgan, they're among the firms that are involved in discussions that U.S. and allies are hoping to prevent a Russian invasion of Ukraine. What did you learn and really take us into it?
Hey, you guys. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah.
Happy Friday.
Me too.
So what we heard and what we reported is that the Biden administration held discussions. We're really consulting these big banks to make sure that, you know, any sanctions wouldn't disrupt the global financial system. And so what we're looking at here is Russia is really integrated into the global financial system. So it's less, you know, how will Citigroup be impacted or how will JP Morgan be impacted or something like that, and really more so making sure that the government understands the full range of consequences for, you know, any actions or set of actions that they may take.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I think you think about the global banks, and I do wonder about the relationship they have with maybe some of the different markets. What is kind of the ties between Russia and the U.S. banking industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, so like of the three biggest U.S. banks, Citigroup is the only one that even breaks out its exposure to Russia. And, you know, those assets are really just, I think it was 0.3% of its total assets. So it's not, you know, you're not talking some kind of like outsized exposure on behalf of the U.S. banks here. But that's not really the issue. It's more, you know, the interconnectedness of the financial system as a whole. And when you're looking at things like, you know, the SWIFT payment system, which is considered the nuclear option here, but if you cut off Russia from something like that, it's how does that impact, you know, the way business gets done and the way that banks facilitate that globally.
That's a really good point, especially when you think about how all the conversations we've had about the global supply chain, and there's a global financial supply chain in terms of how things work around the world. The other thing I think about is I wonder how the banks are thinking about Europe's relationship with Russia, whether it's an economic impact if things start to break down. You know, that is Europe obviously more directly impacted than the United States in that form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, definitely. And, you know, all of these big banks have global exposure, and when you're looking at, I mean, I think I was just reading that I think when Western nations threatened Russia's access to SWIFT back in 2014, one of their finance ministers said it could reduce Russia's GDP by like 5% in a year. Mm. So, you know, when you think about these consequences, you know, not just in Russia, but then spillover effects to, you know, those countries that are closer geographically, like you just mentioned, then you're looking at that question of, you know, global growth and how that impacts the banks. And also, you know, when you think about, you're talking about volatility in the markets, which this week has been, you know, crazy as it is. But then you think about, you know, if there's all this uncertainty around that, will people be on the sidelines and just right. all of those implications as well.
Well, and there's the traditional big banks, right? And then there's also like a MasterCard. I know you guys cite the CEO in your story. I mean, they talk about it being a substantial and strategically important market for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that really goes back to the payments thing and the payment system as a whole.
So what do banks and financial institutions do now that they've been briefed? How do they prepare for such a situation?
I mean, you know, it's a back and forth. It's not, you know, I think that the administration, my sense is, wants to learn from the banks as well and the people whose job it is at the banks to understand the potential outcomes. So, you know, there's some back and forth there. But, you know, at the end of the day, banks have had to deal with sanctions before. And that's really the point of these conversations is for them to, you know, be able to determine forward as well as the administration.
Hannah, real quickly, just got about 25 seconds. Who's more worried, the Biden administration about spillover or banks more worried about spillover?
That's a good question. You know, That's a great question. I'll leave that to them.
To be continued. Hey, great reporting. And it's a Bloomberg exclusive. And it is among the most read on the Bloomberg in what's been a crazy, cray-cray week. Hannah Levitt, thanks so much. Finance reporter at Bloomberg News on the phone in New York City. You know, what I love about what she said, too, is just it's a reminder when we have spoken so much about the connectivity between supply chains, but the financial supply chain is so connected.
Yeah, and it's not something that you can really visualize, but it absolutely is. I mean, think about the fact that all these companies in their earnings are talking about cross-border transactions.
And we take it for granted, right, that this stuff just works so seamlessly, and that's not always the case.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes' Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
In the new issue of Bloomberg Business Week, it's out, and in it you'll find a story about one crypto company, its founder, and why regulators are keeping an eye on it.
The story by Zeke Fox, financial investigations reporter at Bloomberg News. He joins us now to talk about his story. It's about Celsius. Also joining us is Joel Weber, editor at Bloomberg Business Week. He joins us on the Access Line from Brooklyn. Celsius is 18% yields on crypto. They're tempting, and they're drawing scrutiny. Joel, so is Celsius a bank? It takes your crypto. It's not regulated as a bank. What is Celsius?
Sounds great. And 18% yields definitely catch attention. And for a long time, it's been people who are willing to lend crypto to Celsius and get those returns. And increasingly, it's making some regulators take notice too. Zeke, how do you get 18% yields?
So, the pitch is really compelling. It's the Celsius's founder, Alex Mashinsky. He says, listen, it's not hard to get 18% yields. It's actually the big banks are robbing you. They take your deposits. They go out and invest them. They make lots of money, and they don't give you the profits. Meanwhile, if you send your crypto to Celsius, it'll go out and invest it, and it'll pay you 5%, 8%, even 18%, depending on which crypto you send them.
Well, okay, so what do they then do with your crypto?
Yeah, I mean, that is the question. Celsius says that they have these profitable ways of using the crypto, the main one being that they can take the coins that you sent to Celsius and lend them to big traders like hedge funds, who will use them to make really profitable bets. And these traders, they have trouble borrowing money elsewhere, so they're willing to pay a lot to Celsius. And Celsius can keep like a little sliver for itself and pay out the rest to the depositors.
So it sounds like a win-win. Or what are we missing?
Pretty much. I mean, when I heard the pitch, that was my question. Like, what's the catch? Because in general, if someone is paying you a high interest rate, it's because, you know, they're taking some sort of risk with your money. And that's what I set out to investigate. Because while Celsius says it's really transparent, it doesn't give out any sort of financial statement that shows exactly what it's doing with all the money that it's collecting. And it's not regulated like a bank, even though the basic proposition is pretty similar to a bank. It's not really regulated at all. But in recent months, a bunch of state securities regulators have started looking into Celsius, and so has the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is saying that maybe by doing what it does, it's breaking the law and offering people what are essentially investment products that the SEC should be overseeing.
Zeke, if that were to happen, if the SEC then does have to oversee these products, does that somehow ruin Celsius's business model, or could they change their business model so they adhere to adhere to regulations?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, they've been growing so fast. They got up to $25 billion in assets last year, more than quadrupled. I don't see why it couldn't go on with regulation, but the regulators would want to know exactly what they're doing with all the money, and they might have to disclose it to users. So I spoke with a lot of former employees of Celsius, and what I found was that the company is definitely taking some risks with this money. So if there was more transparency, it's unclear how the users would react.
So Zeke, talk to us more about Mashinsky, because he's got sort of an online, you know, you mentioned those assets. How many people are watching him and tuning into his programming where he sell, you know, basically pitches his services?
Yeah, I mean, he's the founder and he's like the number one pitch man for the company. He's at every crypto conference. He live streams every week. And I mean, just one example of something he said is the beauty of Celsius, of what Celsius managed to do, is that we deliver yield. We pay it to the people who would never be able to do it themselves. We take it from the rich and we beat the index. That's like going to the Olympics and getting 15 medals in 15 different fields. And after he said it, he dabbed and brushed off his shoulders. And he's he talks like this. It sounds like he makes Celsius sound like kind of like a multi-level marketing type business opportunity more than like a bank account. But he has all these fans, like Celsius users. He calls them Celsians. He says there's more than a million of them. These users will write in and be like, I put my life savings in Celsius. Like, I quit my job because I'm making so much money off Celsius. And it seems like Mashinsky really feeds off this energy. And he's 56, which is old by crypto standards. And he likes to say that he calls Celsius money over IP, as if it was like the revolutionary technology voice over IP that let you send phone calls over the internet. And he likes to say that he invented voice over IP, which would make him like a really important inventor in the history of the internet. However, I looked into this. I talked with a bunch of people who worked on voice over IP, and they say Mashinsky did not invent it, that he did have an early voice over IP company, but he didn't invent the technology.
Makes you wonder, right, when someone has to kind of put that out there. Hey, you did talk to those that were formerly employed at that company. I mean, I guess it's a great profile and a deep dive into maybe a company people don't know about. What was your takeaway after your reporting and writing about this?
To me, I think that as a Duke professor told my co-writer, Joe Light, there's no free lunch. If Celsius is paying you a lot of money, they have to be taking some risk with it to earn those returns. And maybe you trust Celsius to take your crypto and invest it, but maybe you want some more information about exactly what they're doing with the money before you decide whether to invest with them. I mean, I found that they'd given at least hundreds of millions of dollars to a guy to invest in DeFi. So they were like taking the users' deposits and sticking them on these DeFi platforms. And the top money manager for DeFi left in a dispute that wasn't disclosed, and they lost a bunch of money in a hack.
Right.
So it seems like, you know, you're definitely, there's some risk involved. Just let the depositor, or I guess not depositor, beware.
Right. Eyes wide open. Hey, we got to run. Zeke, thank you so much. Zeke Vox, he's financial investigations reporter at Bloomberg News. Check out his story. It's in the finance section of the new issue of Bloomberg Business Week magazine, on newsstands, on the Bloomberg, and online at Bloomberg.com/businessweek. Joel Weber, have a great weekend. Editor of Bloomberg Business Week. Catch Joel, me, and Tim. We're on the weekend show of Bloomberg Business Week. You can catch that on Bloomberg Radio at 8 a.m. come Saturday. This is Bloomberg Radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
We just talked about Goldman saying that investors should be skeptical of the narrative that rising adoption of cryptocurrencies must translate into higher prices. Tim, we have that going on. And it's kind of good to keep that in mind when we heard, what was it, about a week ago, the Fed taking a key step in weighing the creation of its own digital currency, a move that the Fed said could help ensure the U.S. dollar's dominance as the central bank grapples really with the fast-growing private crypto markets and coins issued by other nations, right? There's this whole thing going on globally.
Yeah, let's talk about it with Dorothy Giobbe. She's of counsel at Jones Day. She joins us on the phone from New York City. Dorothy, how are you?
Hi, Carol, Tim. Thanks very much for having me on.
Great to have you.
Yeah, really great to have you here. Let's talk about the Fed considering a central bank digital currency. What are some, I want to start with the pros here, because this is something that you look at closely. You have a good understanding of this. Why would the central bank want to do this?
Yeah, Tim, it's a great question. And so as you mentioned, the Fed has come out with this report last week, and it's going to be examining specific use cases and, you know, both the benefits and the challenges of issuing a central bank digital currency. I think that the pros or the potential pros of a CBDC, central bank digital currency, really depend on the particular use case, the way in which the CBDC could be used in a given set of circumstances. So some potential benefits could be the greater efficiency in payment systems, more efficiencies in cross-border payments, better tools to fight financial crime, and also the potential, again, for greater financial inclusion. Those are some of the benefits or the potential pros of a CBDC. I think, you know, what the Fed is doing now is examining these potential use cases and trying to think through whether a CBDC is the right tool to realize some of those issues.
So what would a CBDC do to the average Joe and Jane on Main Street?
Well, again, you know, there are a couple of different models of a CBDC. So one is could be institutional only, and so that would be for use between, you know, payments between financial institutions. So not much impact to the average consumer on the street there. Any efficiencies there would be realized really between the institutions. Now, if there were a retail CBDC or one in which the public could participate, you know, that could again have the potential for greater financial inclusion. So, for example, people might be less likely to go and cash their check with you know, and pay high fees for payday lenders or other, you know, payment services, and the potential for those kinds of benefits to the consumer population, I think, is one of the things that the Fed is looking at in thinking about CBDCs. I will say it's a very important time because as the Fed has put out this report, they have put out a call for input from the public, from elected officials, from other stakeholders. And so to the extent that people have a view or an interest or a, you know, a voice in this discussion, now is the time to get involved. Now is the time to make your views known to the Federal Reserve. They've opened this period for comment, and so people with an interest here should take advantage of that. The comments are, you know, the Fed is going to be asking for comments by May.
Hey, Dorothy, I'm wondering, because you know, spend so much time in this space, what do you think the right move is from the Fed? If you were advising the Fed.
Yeah, I think the Fed is doing exactly what it should do. It is taking its time. You know, the Fed is certainly not the first in this process. There are other countries and other central banks around the world who have been looking at this, the issue of central bank digital currency, and are further along the road, you know, than the U.S. is. But I think the Fed is acting appropriately. They are being very deliberative. They're being very careful. And trying to gain a broad consensus. And, you know, the intent is not for the Fed to sort of act unilaterally here. And in fact, they've said that they will not move forward without broad consensus and broad buy-in from the public, elected officials, and other stakeholders. And so that's the right move. I think, you know, they, as others have said, and I agree with, they don't have to be the first, but they just don't want to be the last.
Mm. Well, and that's the point, right? I mean, there's no kind of ignoring or looking back. You have to look forward at this point because other nations are moving forward. And I think about something like China, right? The U.S. has to keep up.
Well, that's right. China is a very interesting example. They are well down the road to the digital yuan, and, you know, have a pilot and have been, made a lot of progress there. Another interesting example is Sweden. And Sweden's interesting because the, you know, the percentage of transactions that actually use cash, physical cash, mm-hmm. Is much lower than it has been in the past. That's not You know, there aren't the same parallels with the decline in the use of cash. It doesn't translate exactly here to the U.S. So different countries have different motivations for looking at this, looking at the issue of CBDCs and what the potential benefits might be. But I do think the Fed is taking the right course here in being very deliberative and really looking at all of the issues for what could be a very significant impact and change to our financial system and our financial infrastructure.
All right. Well, great to get your input and add it to the narrative that we've been having in the conversation. Dorothy, thank you so much. Dorothy Giobbe, she's of counsel at Jones Day on the phone in New York City. Interesting, right?
Really interesting stuff. Don't want to be the first, don't need to be the first, but don't want to be the last.
Right, exactly. All right, you're listening to Bloomberg Business Week. It's Friday, and this is Bloomberg.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
I'm driving in my car.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive home.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
You drive, stay in prison.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
Just got about 10 minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up the trading day. We are seeing buying into the close. We are at our best levels of the session, more than 2% gain on the S&P, as Charlie mentioned, 2.7% higher on the NASDAQ. Thank you, Apple, but also a lot of other names. And the Dow right now up about 1.5%, Tim. So we're definitely seeing bullishness into the closing bell here.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you, Apple. And you're right to say a lot of other names because of the more than 500 stocks, because there are more than 500 in the S&P 500. 426 or higher, only 77 lower right now. Quite a change from what we saw earlier in the day.
That's an interesting tone and sentiment going into the weekend. So let's see what our next guest has to say. Dave Donabedi, and he is Chief Investment Officer of CIBC Private Wealth Management. They've got about $96 billion in assets under management. He joins us once again on the phone from Baltimore. So Dave, it has been quite a week in a year where we have kind of had quite a week after week after week. To see potentially a positive close on this Friday in a week where we had the Fed meeting and a lot of volatility in the markets and also some big earnings, how do you read it?
Well, I think it's certainly good to see a strong bid to close the week here as the S&P kind of struggles to a draw for the week. I think certainly the Apple earnings report, sort of the bellwether of bellwethers reporting so strong, helps, and perhaps some short covering going on. But still, a tough start to the year.
Okay, so you're not saying necessarily that it's a bullish sign that the sentiment is changing.
No, I don't think yet. I think we're in a back. back and forth market here. We've had a pretty meaningful pullback, which, you know, I think makes some sense. If you look at the drivers of the great bull market rally we had in 2020 and 2021, when the market more than doubled, we had these, you know, three incredibly strong tailwinds: monetary policy, fiscal policy, and a huge earnings recovery. And, you know, those tailwinds are evaporating, right? The Fed is marching toward rate hikes. There's not going to be any more fiscal relief packages coming. And earnings are coming in fine here on the fourth quarter reports, but we know they're going to slow this year. So those tailwinds just aren't as strong. And we started from a level of fairly high valuation. So a bit of a pullback is not terribly surprising.
You sound like somebody who's seen a fair amount of market cycles and understand the market goes up and the market goes down. And we all love to, who've seen a fair amount of market cycles, like to make comparisons to other moments of either volatility or instability or big selling or big buying. How do you kind of put this market cycle in perspective to some of the other past market cycles that we've seen? Or are we still in this market cycle? I know we've had technically corrections, but how do you see it?
I think what you look for in terms of a cycle comparisons is, because it's very relevant to where we're headed, how do markets behave when the Fed pivots from very easy to less easy, right? When they go from a period of, you know, very low interest rates to saying we actually need to start to tighten. And we learn a couple of things from history. First, markets are more volatile in general, both stock and bond markets, and we certainly are seeing that already. The record for the equity market, though, is that it does reasonably well during the early phase of Fed rate tightening. You've heard the old adage, it's not the first Fed hike to worry about, it's the last one. There's a lot of truth to that, and the numbers bear it out. So the Fed doing an interest rate hike, or even a few this year, does not mean that we're headed for a bear market in the short term. We actually think the bull market gets knocked around a lot this year, but survives, mainly because we're going to continue to have economic growth and decent earnings growth. But, corrections are just going to be a part of the landscape, which they, of course, were not last year.
Dave, how do we know when we hit the bottom in one of these corrections, if the sell-off continues after this week?
The truth is you never know when the absolute bottom is. I think what you have to do as a stock picker is have your candidate list, companies you'd love to own for the next 3 to 5 years, and the price at which it makes sense to own them. One of the things that happens when you get these market pullbacks is stocks you didn't think you'd be able to buy at the right price, suddenly you can. So I think it makes sense for investors to be opportunistic. I guess I would say if sentiment gets too bearish, literally where people are starting to price in a bear market, that isn't a buying opportunity, because I don't think that's how things are going to transpire.
Yeah, it does feel like to some extent market cycles, I don't know, especially when they dip back, that we recover much more quickly. I don't know, maybe I'm just reading wrongly into something. But how do you see it? If we do ultimately hit a recession, we're watching Germany, right? Europe's watching it in terms of kind of getting very close to that point. Do you think it is something that is protracted, or who knows?
One of the reasons why it seems like we recover more quickly off of rough periods or bear markets is that while the Fed may not admit it, they are more responsive to market conditions and market behavior. And so we've tended to see the Fed come in more quickly and more dramatically to try and provide liquidity to markets, and which begins the healing process. And we're sort of headed toward the other end of the telescope there now. The Fed feels there's too much liquidity in the system, and the inflation numbers bear that out. This year, the way in which they withdraw that liquidity is going to be key to the market being able to continue to push through. Like I said, it's going to lead to volatility.
Yeah.
Inflation's not going away, but we're starting this Fed tightening cycle from deeply negative real interest rates. So there's a way to go before policy is actually restrictive on credit and the economy.
Well, when do you know when that is? And again, that's another timing question. But, you did tell our producers that the first Fed hike is not a problem for equities. It's the last one that's the trouble. So just in 30 seconds, what do you mean by that?
Well, just that it at some point, as the Fed continues to tighten, they reach a tipping point where they begin to, lead to money being costly. The price of money goes up and begins to restrict the flow of credit. And that's, the old saying that the, bull markets aren't killed by time. They're murdered by the Fed. Mm-hmm. Again, we're a long way away from that, but we have to watch the pace of Fed activity here.
And it's not an exact science. The Fed will tell you that as well, that they do it and it takes a while for it to kick in, and it's very easy to potentially overdo it. Hey, Dave, thank you so much. Nice to get your thoughts. Dave Donabedian, he's Chief Investment Officer at CIBC Private Wealth Management, on the phone from Baltimore.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.